Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 9th of December. It looks like this is what's on the table right now. $15 billion to the big three in America for bridge loans, restructuring plans by the auto industry by March 31st, limits on executive pay, and the appointment of a car czar. I'm not sure what that job entails, but we'll talk about that during the course of this hour. All of this is still being negotiated in Washington, D.C. as we speak. We have two guests to talk about what should happen, what's the future, what kind of money does and should the auto industry in the United States receive. We have two guests with us this hour, Dennis Williams, who's director of the United Auto Workers Region Number 4. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Kathleen.
And Todd Lassa is also joining us. He's Detroit editor and a blogger for Motor Trend Magazine. Todd, thanks very much for your participation today. Hi.
Happy to be here, yeah. Kathleen.
Let's start, Dennis, with you. Where do things look in Washington? Do you think what I outlined at the beginning is where the administration and Congress is going, or does it yet to be worked out?
Well, I mean, the devil's always in the detail, but yeah, it looks like that's where they're going. We're interested to see exactly how the package would shake out and what this czar role will be.
Yeah, I am too. What's the role of a car czar? What's a car czar?
I think we're all waiting to hear. I hope it's somebody that understands the auto industry, because it's a tough business.
Yeah. Today, the name being floated around, mentioned, I think, by Nancy Pelosi, was Paul Volcker. What do you think of that?
I'm not too sure. I'm not. It depends on what the role is. Mm-hmm. You got to have let companies operate. But when you're using tax dollars, of course, it is a loan. It's not a gift.
Right.
But you got to make sure that they're able to operate so they can sell cars.
Mm-hmm. Todd, what happened to the U.S. auto industry?
What happened? Well, I don't know. You can. It probably has something to do with the Packers trading Favre away.
Everything does, right?
that coincides with about the time that things took a major turn for the worse. And the auto industry had started off the year pretty slowly. When I spoke with Rick Wagner, the CEO and chairman of General Motors, about a year ago, he was predicting a 16.3 million year. That would be 16.3 million vehicles sold in the United States over the calendar year of 2008. And we have had 16 million plus sales every year since 1999. That's a fairly high number. There had been only one 16 million unit year before 1999, and that was back in the, I think, late 80s or early 90s. Kind of a long-winded way of saying that, he predicted 16.3 million at the beginning of the year, said that he expected the first half of the year to be slow and then the second half of the year to turn around. So a number of factors. First of all, you had gas prices shooting up. Mm-hmm. As the industry was already contracting, as credit was tightening, as the credit crisis was starting to build up and people couldn't get credit to buy cars, as people couldn't get, say, second mortgages on their homes and use those second mortgages to buy new cars or lease new cars. And then when gas prices started to subside by mid-September, you had this huge credit crisis resulting in people not being able to get credit. Then on top of it, just a lack of confidence in the consumer. And now the consumer no longer has the confidence or the will to go into a dealership and shop for a new car.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the sacrifices that people may need to make to revitalize, rejuvenate the car industry. Do you think that too much has been made of benefits that union employees are getting, Dennis, and how do you imagine concessions will play out in terms of resuscitating the U.S. auto industry?
Well, I think it's easy to focus on the worker. I mean, we're the people who the company gives us the blueprints and the process, and we build it. I think there's been a great deal made of that, and people tend to forget that the average auto worker makes between around $28 an hour in take home. Then you got your benefits on top of that. But even with that, it's not the $70 figure everybody talks about, because you got a lot of legacy costs. You know, people that got 740,000 retirees out there are collecting pensions, and you know, and insurance and stuff. So they make a big deal out of that. And it, and if you look at the average auto worker wage, it is not out of line with the other factories in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and you know, they like to focus on the blue collar worker, and at the same time, we're the only country in the world that allows CEOs and top executives to get huge bonuses when they don't do a very good job.
It seems as though this go-around, Todd, the empathy is for the workers and not for these guys who shut up in their private planes and they're making an incredible amount of money and then are told, well, maybe you should have driven here, so they come back a little while later in their cars and with a plan. It was so transparent, wasn't it?
Well, it was also so very symbolic. And, you know, in Detroit, we talk a lot about how the banking and the financial industry was able to go in and get loans just by making a phone call. They didn't have to get on private jets to fly from New York to Washington, D.C. And with, you know, basically without any oversight, as far as I can tell, we've gone through roughly half of the $700 billion TARP funds, the Troubled Asset Relief Program funds. And now here come the Detroit Three, or the Big Three, as some in Washington still call them, into Washington, up to Capitol Hill. They fly in private jets. It was an awful performance.
Yes.
The performance they gave before Thanksgiving, came back the second time. And, you know, from the point of view of people, just about everybody covering the auto industry, you know, there seemed to be a disconnect between the Detroit Three, between Rick Wagner, Bob Nardelli, and Alan Mulally speaking with the House and the Senate, and what the House and the Senate members were saying, that, you know, the automakers are actually in the middle of restructuring right now. You spoke earlier about what the cars are might do. Having looked through the discussion draft of the House bill that's being hammered out actually at the White House right now, the cars are would be the person overseeing, you know, what happens to those funds, how they'd be dispersed, and make sure that the automakers kind of comply with the rules within the bill as it exists at this point. So this is a long way of saying that, you know, basically the automakers have made a lot of changes. Yeah, they flew in private jets. Yeah, it was a really poor idea. They got some really bad PR advice there. Second time around, they came in with, you know, driving hybrid cars. Maybe they picked them up in Baltimore, I don't know. But whatever, at least it worked a little bit better that second time. You have Rick Wagner saying that just given the current changes that have been made to the UAW contract, the 2007 contract that includes that VEBA that kicks in 2010, that General Motors can be on par with Toyota right around 2012 in terms of labor costs.
Mm. It seems to me, though, Dennis, as though all of this is wrapped up in this horrible economic climate that we find ourselves in right now. We're getting layoffs all over the place, huge number of job losses in November, probably in December as well. How is this tied in, the whole future of the auto industry, to the future of the American economy? People can't afford to buy cars right now, can they?
Well, you got to have jobs. That's
right.
I mean, people have to have jobs. They got to feel comfortable within their employment. And nobody does right now. I mean, in our region particularly, because we cover so many states, nine, we represent a huge diversified group out there. I mean, from Kohler Manufacturing to Lennox to Electrolux to, you know, to John Deere and Cat. And so when you have this kind of economy and you see all sectors of the economy affected by the downturn of the banking and this is serious, and
mm-hmm.
You know, regardless, we can't afford as a country to allow the Big Three to go out of business. That's 3.5 million people out of work. So we got to be careful here. So yeah, the big thing here is GM, Ford, and Chrysler were on their way to making the kind of changes that they needed to make. The United Auto Workers had negotiated a contract that it was unprecedented in our history, where we were going to take, like Todd said, the VEBA. which would relieve the companies of their health care. So they were on their way. Then all of a sudden, the bank industry fell apart. You know, and the gas prices was part of it, but there was a recovery plan for that even. But then the credit market just collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, jobs is everything right now.
Sure. I was interested in this story out of Detroit where the Pentecostal bishop at Greater Grace Temple appeared and they appeared with three SUVs, I believe, on Sunday, inviting officials from the UAW to speak. And the sermon was a hybrid hope. All the SUVs were gas electric hybrids, obviously praying for some kind of change here, praying for a vision. What about the vision of Detroit right now and our SUVs that are gas electric hybrids, the hope of the future, Todd?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that SUVs kind of aren't the problem anymore. I think, SUV hybrid powered SUVs are kind of an interim step for people who still need SUVs and want to get right around 20 miles per gallon.
Mm.
And the thing is, as Dennis points out, the auto industry has been in domestic auto industry has been in the midst of a big change, and they've been heading toward what we call crossover SUVs, which are car-based SUVs. They're somewhat smaller, they're lighter, they generally have V6 engines instead of V8 engines and get pretty decent fuel mileage, well, relatively decent fuel mileage. And then you also have the automakers concentrating more on cars. Ford Motor Company, which has relied on the F-150 as its bestseller, as the nation's bestseller for at least a decade, if not longer now, is in the midst of making a huge change to cars. And that means that, you know, obviously the F-150, because, as you know, in Wisconsin you have a lot of people in the rural areas, farmlands, that who need pickup trucks.
Sure.
Will still be around, but we'll also see cars like the Ford Fiesta and a redesigned Ford Focus in about a year. You've got Ford introducing hybrid versions of Fusion in Milan in just a couple of months that get 5 miles per gallon better fuel mileage than a hybrid Camry.
Yeah.
So, you know, the automakers, they've made a lot of mistakes, and I could spend all day pointing them out, but they have been changing, and they've realized that they need to change the product mix and have been doing so in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure workers who are with us every day have some thoughts about this, Dennis. What kinds of cars do they want to be making that they think will sell?
Well, it's funny because we have some pretty good products on its way now is, you know, the money's running out to get them products out there. I think the Malibu right now is one of the hottest products on the market. You know, so I think the workers, you know, we have high hopes for the big three. We always thought they were behind. You know, they don't turn around quick enough their ideas. They have some great prototypes. They have some great visions, but they never come to market. And the reason why is because people are still buying SUVs. They're still buying trucks.
Sure.
And them are high profit margin vehicles.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, part of what we hear is why, you know, why the Congress and everything is taking a shot at the big three and the workers and everything. People can't ignore that the big three is always at a disadvantage to all the other companies that import in this country. The rules are not fair, and Congress has to get their act together and start giving us a level playing field. You know, and that's the American people can stand up and make that change.
How are the rules not fair?
Well, for one thing, many countries, when we go into import into other countries to export our goods, and they have content laws. We don't. So we are like an open market, and anybody that else wants to send anything here can. And without any rules. And Mexico, I mean, do we want to start lowering our standards to Mexico standards or to China's standards? And then you take the Japanese companies. They don't have to deal with health care costs. They
mm-hmm.
have a national health care program.
Mm-hmm.
And their government helps with R&D. Their government right now is helping them with the auto market. You know, so I mean, there has to be a level playing field when it comes to this stuff, and the faster the American people demand that, the better off we will be. And I think perhaps we may get some attention on that in the future Congress, because it's been on deaf ears. Give you another example. Yeah, you know, who manipulates their yens and their dollars and more so than China and some of the other countries around the world? They manipulate their currency against ours, which gives us another unlevel playing field. So there's a whole lot of things out there that we, you know, some people in Congress and the United States Senate needs to look themselves in the mirror also.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of all that he said there? There was a lot there, Todd.
Well, you know, I agree in many cases. I would say, you know, the standard of production in places like Mexico and China can actually be quite good these days, and I understand the UAW aversion toward that. The Mexican factories have been made possible by NAFTA. I would also say that both the U.S. auto industry and the foreign auto industry has seen a great need to produce cars in the United States as well as in Canada, where they're represented by the CAW largely, and also in Mexico. The thing is, whether you're a union factory or not, there's good reason to produce here, and the cost of producing here are not necessarily that high. The strongest auto industry in the world right now is probably, and has been for a while, has been the German auto industry, and the union requirements for building cars in Germany are at least as tough as they are in the United States, if not putting them at a disadvantage to you know, United States, the standard here. You know, the real issue, and you spoke about it at the beginning of the show, you know, what are the chances? Where is this bill right now? What's going to happen? I think there's still a chance we may not see a bailout before the end of the year, which is when General Motors and Chrysler say they need money or they're going to have to stop production, may file for bankruptcy, and part of that comes from Richard Shelby, a senator from Alabama, and his counterpart, his cohort in Alabama, Jeff Sessions, both Republican senators from Alabama, are strongly against this and have even kind of hinted that they may try to filibuster this bill when it gets to the Senate. Alabama is a state that has several car factories. None of them are union. They have Hyundai, they have Honda, they have Mercedes-Benz, they have a diesel engine factory there, I believe. They have a Toyota engine factory. And by the way, that Toyota engine factory in Alabama builds engines for big pickup trucks, for the V8 engines for the Tundra and the Sequoia, as well as some V6 engines.
Really?
So, you know, it certainly is, you know, especially with the kind of the fight between the Democrats and the Republicans on Capitol Hill. There's certainly the issue comes down to the unions, and the Republicans have not supported bailouts for the auto industry, saying at least on the surface, well, you know, the capitalism weeds out the companies that don't do well, and they should be weeded out. You know, that's been their argument, and you know, it does come down to a union breaking sort of move.
Interesting. Do you think, Dennis, though, that these senators would let the big three go under?
The two senators they spoke to, yes, I do. I think. And by the way, their state probably gives more subsidies to foreign brand names than any other state in the United States. So, you know, and it's ironic, you know, that these senators was fighting for the textile industry how many years ago?
Right, I remember that.
You know, so, I mean, it's kind of ironic now that they've switched the way they did. But, yeah, there's animosity there, and they certainly do not like us. But that, you know, that's what we're up against, and that's why we need to, well, hopefully we'll get closure and move on with this. Because I think that, you know, if you could just imagine 3.5 million people losing their jobs, 3.5 million people having to withdraw their money from the banks because, you know what, we got to live, and now we're scared. This could be from a recession to a depression overnight, and American people ought to be afraid. And people, senators like these two senators are dangerous in my opinion, to a nation's economy.
Yeah, I think American people are afraid. Let's welcome phone calls. We're going to have tons of them, so call in early, 800-486-8655. We have two great guests with us, Todd Lassa, who's Detroit editor of Motor Trend magazine. Dennis Williams is with us. He is director of the United Auto Workers Region 4, which includes Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana. Our email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, Terry Lynch will be joining us. Terry is the author of But I Don't Want Elder Care, Helping Your Parents Stay as Strong as They Can, As Long as They Can. Terry has a very interesting background. He has worked with the White House Conference on Individuals with Disabilities and spent over 10 years as his mother's caregiver. So he will be talking with us about a variety of important issues for those of you who are caregivers or may be caregivers at some point in your lives. That's coming up the second hour. All right, to your phone calls. Dennis is our first caller from Milwaukee. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Good morning.
Hello. Whoops, something fell.
I'm just curious. Well, a couple things. That is this whole problem. It's not a financial crisis. It's an economic crisis. That September 24th, they passed that $612 billion defense authorization bill, and at that same time, they were asking for the $700 billion. Well, that week, September 24th, they were passing $187.75 billion per day banks were borrowing from the Fed. The following week after that was $367.8 billion per day. And then the week after that, it was, $437.5 billion per day? And they're reporting, what was it?
You want to move this into the carb industry?
Well, the thing is that these numbers are... Your host or guest was saying $700 billion. Well, the fact is it's $8.5 trillion. That's what the bailout is costing.
Uh-huh.
That's the true number.
All right, and you think that there shouldn't be – what about the auto industry? Should they be helped?
Well, I think that the problem is in the 70s, wages went stagnant. And that's the core issue, is that the people here in this country can no longer – buy any products. That's why they went through this Ponzi scheme of credit to borrow the workers' money so they could buy their products.
Dennis?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if all, you know, all the numbers that he quoted. I mean, we've been in a crisis for a long time. I disagree with the caller in this respect. I think that the crisis have not been people being able to afford products. So, we're buying goods, or we have been for many years. The problem is we're not manufacturing any goods. Okay, what we're doing is buying from China, Taiwan. I went out to look for a little circular saw this weekend. Not one I didn't find any made in the United States of America.
Hmm.
None of them. And I was just shocked at the stores that I went to have historically been a United States brand name, and they no longer, in fact, I went to three different stores, zero. We are a paper country, and we're not manufacturing products. If we don't manufacture products, we got to, you know, I heard somebody say the other day, and I don't remember who it was, you got to either have, be digging something up for services such as coal or oil or something. You got to manufacturing things in the country, and you got to produce like food. Them are the three core things to a solid government, a sovereign government, and we're not doing that. So I don't totally disagree with, or I totally agree with the caller.
Thanks, Dennis, for the call. Let's go to Mary from Manitowoc. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. The comment is, and I don't hear this coming up in any discussions, as to why Americans don't buy American cars, is the question of quality. We owned three American cars, none of which lasted nearly up to 10 years. One, the engine went up on all three of them, and one of the cars was only 4 years old, and we took good care of them, and we didn't, you know, drive them in danger, you know, in bad conditions. And so, and on the other hand, I now own a 1995 Honda Civic. It's well over 125,000 miles. And the biggest thing I've had to have replaced it on it was two tie-end rods. And so I'm very hesitant to buy an American car.
Todd, let's go to Todd on this.
Mary, what was your most recent American car? How long ago was that?
The last one that went up was 1991 or 92.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I've been there. I know what you're talking about. My parents drove American cars for a long, long time, and they had a bad luck with a 1984 Buick, and then bought four Honda Accords in a row. And strangely enough, they just bought. Well, maybe it's not so strange. It is strange because last month, when nobody was buying cars, they bought a lightly used 2008 Cadillac CTS for about the price of what you would pay for maybe a Honda Accord V6. And actually, my wife and I drove it from Michigan to New Berlin so that my parents could have that car. So they're taking a chance at it, I have to say. But if you read all the statistics, the J.D. Power consumer reports and so on, consumer reports now says that Ford in initial quality is pretty much a match for Honda and Toyota. You know, Toyota having become nearly the world's largest automaker, they're neck and neck with General Motors in overall sales globally. You know, when you build that many cars, you're going to run into problems too. It's hard to say, you know. I think most manufacturers have reached a fairly high level. I think whether you buy cars from the U.S., from a U.S. company, from a European company, from a Japanese or a Korean company, the quality is pretty close to equal right now. Cars are so much more reliable now than they were even 10 years ago, and I don't think that's necessarily true. What's happened is that General Motors still sells, you know, 20 or 21% of the cars on trucks sold in the U.S. That's a much smaller amount than what they sold before there was any foreign competition. However, that's still a pretty large number of cars. So people are buying General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler cars. You now have a market much like Europe where no one in this market will have more than 20 or 21% market share. And GM needs to shrink as a result of that.
Mm. Thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Could we spend, before we go back to phone calls, just a little more time, gentlemen, on restructuring plans? These loans would be given with the stipulation that you have to restructure your companies. What are we talking about here? What needs to be restructured, do you think, Dennis?
Well, I think, you know, the Big Three was on their way to restructuring, putting out new models. You know, we looked at the work rules and we looked at how we produce the vehicles, you know, the quality issue, how they get supplies or how they get parts from suppliers is part of the restructuring.
Hmm.
There's a lot of things in the process before the economic collapse started. So when you talk about restructuring, I think General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler were all doing that. So I don't think there's a lot to do when it comes to putting the products into production, that kind of restructuring. I think a lot of the lawmakers are looking at how do you restructure your finances in this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Ron Gittelfinger, our president of the UAW, said it right. We are prepared to look at anything and everything, providing all the players come to the table, not just workers. And that's what Shelby and all them like to point out. That, you know, if everybody comes to the table, we'll look at it.
What do you think about restructuring, Todd?
Well, I think Dennis is right. A lot of the restructuring was underway. Rick Wagner says that he's cut $9 billion out of General Motors' structural costs. They still had another $5 billion to go. 2010 was kind of the pot at the end of the rainbow kind of year for the automakers because of the VIBA and because car sales tend to go in cycles. There was a belief and a hope that by 2010 car sales would pick up again, and you had all these kinds of new product, including the Chevy Volt and the Chevy Cruze. I mentioned the Forge that would be coming on board in 2010 as 2011 model year cars, and that would help turn things around. But now, because of what's happened to the economy, we're not sure even 2010 is going to be a good year. As far as the bill goes, there's some troubling aspects that, of course, the bill is put forth by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She's from the California delegation. California wants to see an even stricter emissions and therefore fuel economy standard than what the federal government has proposed or what the federal government has in place. I kind of don't like that because it's California basically telling the rest of the country we're going to dictate that cars by 2020 get 43 miles per gallon instead of 35 miles per gallon. And so there are some troubling aspects in the bill there, the restructuring. The other problem is that, and again, going back to last Friday's House hearings with the big three, that you had some House members, some representatives expressing concern over what's going to happen to the car dealers in their neighborhood, in their district, what's going to happen to auto workers in their district. Well, unfortunately, part of this restructuring means that you have to take the capacity for the American cars down. It was at the height, even when car sales were good, around 17 or 18 million per year, the capacity in this country was about 23 million per year. It's currently about 18 million per year. Unfortunately, restructuring means that some UAW workers will be laid off, and in the case of General Motors, they want to reduce the number of dealers they have in the United States from about 6,500 down to about 4,700.
Mm-hmm.
So even improving the way these companies run means that some businesses will close, some people will be out of work.
Right. Let's go next to Harold from Superior. Hi, Harold.
Well, hi.
Hi.
You just kind of took a little of the wind out of my sails. I heard you earlier saying, you know, how if we don't bail them out, well, the country's going to go down. But, in fact, if we bail them out without sales, they're going to be back in 6 months or 3 months with their hat in hand again. And they have to do like the mines on the Iron Range here in northern Minnesota. I've seen it a dozen times. They're up and they're booming and then they bust and they shut the mines down. They shut the taconite plants down. And the airlines have been merging. And what we've got to see here is a cut in production by all of them and probably a merger if it was GM or a sale off of GM and sale or merge and the other one cut back because there's just too much capacity. We're retired and on a very limited income, and I just hate to see this. Somebody's got to pay the bill, and we're just getting by ourselves. And to put this on the people's back is just not fair. And it's you know, who else are we going to bail out? The railroads, the farmers, the ethanol plants, the airlines, steel plants. Where does
it end?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a good question, Dennis.
Well, first of all, I mean, people keep talking about as if it's a gift. It's a loan. If the companies were able to go to the banks right now and get the money to continue operating, they wouldn't be in Washington, D.C. They'd be at the bank signing documents to continue their production. This is not where the taxpayer is giving money and never seeing it back. Don't forget what we did with Chrysler in the 80s. They got $300 million back in the government over what the initial $1 billion loan was. So that's one thing. The other thing is the caller needs to keep in mind the taxpayer is going to pay a huge price if they don't get the loan, because all the retirees, all the workers without work, are going to go on the burden of the taxpayer, okay? And then on top of that, we could become from a recession to the depression very quickly. You know, no one blinks an eye when they give $110 billion to the sick group over the weekend, 3 weeks ago. And, you know, people has a tendency to forget. These big three companies during 9/11, and I got, just to give you an idea, Ford gave $10 million to the American Red Cross. GM gave $10 million to the Red Cross. Chrysler gave $10 million to the Red Cross. Hyundai, nothing. BMW, nothing. Daihu, nothing. Fiat, nothing. Honda, nothing. Isuzu, nothing. Mitsubishi, nothing. Nissan, nothing. Porsche, nothing. Subaru, nothing. Suzuki, nothing. Toyota sent their condolences. These are American companies with American foothold, and we ought to be taken care of. I'm a veteran, and a lot of other people are veterans. How many of our fathers converted our plants from building farm equipment and auto manufacturing into war machines to save our country and to fight a world war? Don't forget all that. That's important to our sovereignty.
Oh, there are so many threads to this story. What about the fact that we may not be able to have three American automakers? What about two? What about, there have been talks about nationalizing at least one of these companies. What about all of that, Todd?
Well, there's been, if you look at the draft bill, again, that came out yesterday, there's a little bit of nationalization in there, and that's what this car czar would do, would be, again, make sure that the automakers do what the government thinks it should be doing to revitalize the industry. And, of course, part of the plan is that the nation would take warrants. That is, the nation would be paid back before shareholders would be paid under this plan. So you can look at it from certain angles that that's a sort of nationalization. You know, GM buying Chrysler, they were in talks last fall about that, and I thought it was dumb at the time, and I think it's dumb now. Part of General Motors' plan for revitalization is that they're going to shave off some of their brands, and they're going to make Pontiac what they call a specialty brand, so it'll have fewer cars. Their General Motors' problem for a long time is that with 20% of the U.S. auto market instead of 50 or 60% of the auto market, it can't really support all those brands. And then to have to take on Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep and then keep at least one or two of those running just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Harold, very much for the call. Barbara is next from Stoughton. Hi, Barbara.
Hello, how are you today?
Fine, Barbara. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I wanted to talk a little bit about that human aspect that came up.
Can you speak up just a little bit? You're a little soft here.
Sure. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the human aspect of this. My dad's a World War II vet and built those Woody station wagons in Upper Michigan and continues to receive the retiree benefits from Ford up there and the insurance, which has been a blessing to our family. My dad can get his care through the VA hospital, but my mom's care and her medications are somewhat supported through that retiree plan, and she would be the one who would be most affected, which would in turn probably really hurt my dad to see that happen. But my understanding is that in the last union proposition that the auto workers voted to continue those retirement benefits to the retirees, for which our family is very grateful. And the other thing that I wondered about was when my dad was in World War II and had been working for Ford, he was drafted there, excuse me, and his seniority continued to for Ford while he was serving, and I'm wondering if that still occurs now with the current folks who are not drafted but serving in Iraq through the National Guard or anything like that.
All right, let's go to a response here. Dennis?
I heard, I think, the majority of it.
Mm-hmm.
The health care benefits, I appreciate the caller, because that's what this is about, putting a human face on it. The insurance, if they went to a Chapter 11 or something like that, could actually be harmed, without a doubt. I mean, we could end up some judge deciding that no one deserves health care. As far as the veterans go, they do accumulate seniority. UAW had been in the forefront of making sure that we negotiate that they continue that, but now the law also provides it, that they can't be harmed by their service. And that really came to light during the Vietnam era.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your call, Barbara. Let's go to an email here and combine a couple of them. One listener would suggest Ralph Nader for Car Czar. He got to shake things up in Detroit. And then another question, and let's direct this to you first, Todd. Will the Auto Czar change the tax provisions which have favored SUVs over 6,000 pounds by allowing extra depreciation and tax credits for these vehicles? Essentially, these large vehicles have been used as a method to avoid paying taxes. How about credits for light cars and penalties for heavy cars?
Well, I favor the latter. I'm not crazy about the idea of Ralph Nader as Car Czar. You could say that the government, in the way it's set up the CAFE regulation, corporate average fuel economy, and of course there's been a lot of criticism that automakers have fought that off and kept the CAFE number relatively low for the last 20-some years, and now we're finally getting a 35 MPG number by 2020. Well, the federal government also saw fit to split off the CAFE so that there'd be a separate one for trucks and a separate one for cars. The one for trucks is lower. You have to achieve a lower MPG to sell a truck, and therefore, and that basically spurred the sport utility vehicle production. Those things were very profitable, easy to make, and the federal government basically encouraged that through that CAFE rule. On top of it, and I don't know if anybody is doing this anymore, but the tax break that your caller or your writer was referring to, basically, if you were a small business, and even if you didn't need it, if you bought a Hummer H1 or H2 because it was beyond a certain gross vehicle weight limit, I think 6,400 pounds actually, you got a complete tax credit on that as your business. I don't know if that's making much of a difference right now. As far as any tax breaks to spur small car sales, you could do that. I think a tax credit probably for hybrids would not be a bad idea. There's been some talk about just giving a tax credit to anybody who buys a car just to spur the economy, mm-hmm. to get people back in the showrooms anymore. I'm not sure, given the really low level of confidence in the economy, whether that's going to be possible. I'd also point out that this last weekend, as the House was writing up this draft bill, you had President-elect Obama talking about a kind of a works project program, which kind of yearns back to the FDR days, and proposes to provide something like 2.5 million jobs. That's the type of thing that might be needed. You just basically need to create demand, and you've got the banks and financial industry comes in and gets its bailout first. That's supposed to spur the economy. It hasn't worked. The auto industry then, as a result of that, is running out of cash. The U.S. auto industry comes and says, we need help. And now there's people are tired of handing money out to private business. And it's just kind of snowballing. One last thing I'd say in regard to a Car Czar at Motor Trend here, we're promoting the idea of Roger Penske as Car Czar, someone who is a businessman who understands cars, owns dealerships, and is pretty straightforward and has done a lot actually to help the city of Detroit. He was in charge of organizing the Super Bowl here a couple of years ago and did a great job.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any preferences for Car Czar, Dennis?
No, I had not thought about Penske, though. I mean, Penske has a track record with the United Auto Workers, too, working out the problems that we've had. So I, you know, no, I haven't really put a whole lot of thought about it. When I heard about it, I scratched my head, you know. But I want somebody who has a fairness about them, somebody who understands the industry, and can put a human face with what they're discussing too. So I mean, somebody that has to, and maybe Penske is the guy. I don't know. I'm not too sure. What other names are out there?
Mm-hmm.
No preference at this time.
Judy is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I would love to support American workers, and I would love to buy an American car. I have a 2003 Honda Civic Hybrid. In warm weather, I get about 50 miles to the gallon. When it gets as cold as it is now, 42 miles to the gallon. If I went into any American car dealership today, could I meet or exceed that mileage? If I could, I would buy the car today.
Todd?
Well, unfortunately, you can't. I can't think of anything that gets quite that fuel mileage. I think the Chevy Cobalt four-cylinder, well, they're all four-cylinders. There's a high fuel mileage version that gets close to, it gets in the upper 30s or low 40s on the highway. And again, unfortunately, this is the problem. I would say for the kind of car Judy wants, you would have to wait about a year and look at something like the Chevrolet Cruze, which without a hybrid engine will get 43 miles per gallon in on the highway, or you could look at the hybrid Ford Fusion coming out in a couple of months that will get 38 city, 38 highway. That's lower than the numbers you mentioned, but those will be the EPA numbers, and you might actually, you know, with careful driving, get better fuel mileage. And you're also talking about a somewhat larger car than the Honda Civic, so it's a little bit better appointed. It's in a larger class of car. So there you go. I mean, yes, they're certainly Toyota, especially, and Honda have been ahead of the U.S. industry in terms of hybrids.
Sure.
They're catching up. In the next year or two, you'll see more.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. We go next to Gary from Milwaukee. Hi, Gary.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Say I have to take issue with your speaker today when he mentioned all of the American car industries giving $10 million during 9/11. What was the salary of the CEOs? What were their stock options that year? You know, they just flew up to Washington and spent the year's salary on jet fuel to get to Washington, D.C. to beg for money. There's just a, you know, you say this stuff with your tongue in your cheek. If Honda can make a car engine that gets 50 miles per gallon, why can't we? There is no excuse for this, and I believe that Ralph Nader would be great because he would embrace different technologies. He wouldn't be relying on this ethanol and the oil industry. We have a grant, I believe, at UW-Madison here that has proven that corn is not the best solution for ethanol. There are many other agricultural products that will give you a better fuel substitute. And we've also seen that we can make cars run on vegetable oil. I've been out west with my job and gone past fields and fields of sunflowers, and we could probably make a fuel out of sunflower oil. Or we have to get off this record of squeezing it out of the Arab countries, and we have to start afresh with the new technologies.
Dennis.
Well, first of all, GM, for instance, makes more vehicles that get over 30 miles a gallon than any other manufacturer. But the caller, I mean, I don't know why you can take exception. But it's a fact. Fact is that the three big three did give $10 million, and others didn't contribute to a time of crisis. That's the difference right there. But as far as I agree with the caller that, you know, we are advocates of better fuel vehicles with fuel mileage. We are also advocates of clean air. We are also advocates of we need to become independent from foreign oil. So I don't know what he gets exception about, because we're in agreement except for the fact the facts are the facts. The $10 million is for real.
Thanks, Gary, for your call. Let's go next to Tom from Mequon. Hi, Tom.
Really, really a good show. It's one of the best you've ever had. It seems to me that the poor auto industry is being pinched from both the right and the left, and I could not agree less about the ethanol and stuff like that. That's a terrible idea to strip the earth of its nutrients that's just taken thousands of years to put in there and put it in a person's gas tank. That just doesn't make sense to me. I appreciate these guests that you've had on, and there's some very good points that have been brought up. I've seen that the left has been against the auto industry really since the 70s by putting on two stronger mandates that really shouldn't have been put on, like the CAFE. It should really be up to what people want to buy. I also think, lastly, that the government has hurt the industries in that it's allowed all these jobs to leave the country, and the tax laws have encouraged that. And I wish the U.S. would go back to good laws that they had, like, say, back in the 70s, dealing with credit, housing, banking. I think that would help things out, too.
All right. Thanks so much for your comments, and we'll have to end the show with those comments. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. It was a very good hour.
Thank you.
Todd, Dennis.
Kathleen, my pleasure.
Yeah, best of luck to both of you. It's quite a time here in America. Dennis Williams, director of United Auto Workers Region 4, which includes the north central states of Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Montana. Todd Lassa is Detroit editor and a blogger for Motor Trend magazine. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and to Rob Schroeder for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thanks for all of your interesting calls on this important issue. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We'll return with more conversation in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.